You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Jode Baardemaker. Now we're talking.
Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the ATIPI conference in Dublin, Ireland, 2010. And our guest is Jode Baardemaker. Welcome. Are you religious?
No, not really.
Would you say you were religious with your work? In the way of working?
Well, spiritually, so to speak, I'm not really religious, right? Not religious or anything. I'm raised Catholic, but I'm not religious, religious at all. I follow a little bit Buddhism, like the philosophy and like the just the way of living in a sense. But regarding art or like the design I do or the research I'm doing, it's not that I follow a specific methodology or something. But I'm quite structured, I would say, in a sense, in designing or in researching. But I don't know if you can call it religious or anything.
Well, so. Then we get to the next question. Do you have rituals in your work or outside of your work?
I start the day by reading a bit the news on like the usual blogs. And then when I start designing, I always have some archival material or text or something with me so that I can easily check those sources and go back to watching some images or manuscripts or writings if I design stuff. So in that sense, I don't know, again, if it's a ritual or not, but it's something that I always have with me just to back up myself or get some inspiration or do some things. And also, yeah, I try to read quite a lot during the day when I'm not designing to keep the balance in a sense, because I think both influence one another. So, yeah.
And what sparked your interest in typography?
Oh, I've been writing and drawing a lot when I was little already, like from the beginning, like in school, I was always like drawing or trying to write, so to speak, from a young age already. But when I studied graphic design in the College of Art and Design St. Lucas in Brussels, in my third year of bachelor's, I did an exchange program with Iceland. So I went to study for one term, like 3-4 months, to Iceland. And it's actually there that I got like introduced to different kinds of style of writing, because it was Futhark, like the rune system that was like mainly there. And like the head of the department from that specific school, it was called the, what's the name again in Icelandic? Myndlista och andidaskoli Islands, and it's just a it's like the art and design school in Iceland, but I think it changed names at the moment. And the head of the department, he introduced me to the old style of writing and texts that were available in Iceland back then. And it's also there that I started working with photographer back then and started to design or like draw my first typeface, so to speak, in the Futhark style. It was really quirky and it's really, at the moment, not really good, so to speak. And then afterwards, I was just getting more and more into also investigating Western typography and doing research on also the writing systems. And the fourth year of my bachelor's, because back then it was, the whole course was 4 years, a master's of graphic design in Brussels. And it was 2 years bachelor's, 2 years master's, and the final year was like basically your practical project, self-directed, that you had to fulfill. And I researched some different writing systems, wrote my dissertation on it, and I also started designing like with photographer back then again, like a symbiosis between the different styles of typography. I took some influences from the Arabic Kufic style, also Devanagari with the headline, and try to fuse it into a Latin typeface. It's not really the way of doing things, but then it was like, because it was my first introduction and quite experimental typeface, it's very decorative and ornamental. And for the sake of being experimental, it was a nice and good project. But for designing those, I really started reading more texts and reading people's work, investigating typefaces a bit further. And that's basically how it all started, like my first sparkle or my first aspect with typography.
Your family, there was no influence from your family? Is there?
No, not really. No, not really. In the beginning, I was not really allowed to go to an art or design school because they initially wanted me to be an engineer or do something like different kinds of studies. So it was only after 2 years of studying biology, like at university in Leuven, that I really took the initiative myself. And I enrolled myself into an art and design school. And it's only afterwards that they really supported me with like backing me up basically with my ideas, and also after explaining them, you could also make a good living and interests.
Was that the main reason that they opposed to your choice to?
I think they were a bit indeed afraid that, I mean, being an artist or a designer wouldn't like earn you like a good life or anything, and that they wanted to have security, that I had security and was able to maintain myself and everything. But it's only afterwards, and especially, well, when I finished the project, like my final project in Brussels, I was chosen the laureate, I don't know how you say the word, and I had my own exhibition with the other laureates of the different courses, like also the one from photography, animation, architecture, interior design. We had one exhibition with all the laureates. So I think that was a moment that they really realized that, okay, it's something that I really enjoy doing, and that's really something I wanted to do in my life rather than doing engineering or mathematics or stuff like this. So in that sense, I think that's the moment that they really realized that, I could make something from my life as well. And then afterwards, I didn't immediately go to work because I traveled around India with a backpack just to see something from the world before really throwing myself into like independent design life or something. And from the trip, I really, brought back a lot of like information and drawings and sketches from all the Indian scripts and writing systems that were there. And I started working as a graphic designer at Averbo, the publishers. It's like a publishing house that is mainly concentrating on educational material, like school books or academic books, but it didn't satisfy my needs or my interest or passion. So I started a postgraduate course at the Plantin Mauritius Museum in Antwerp, and they also funded, my parents funded my studies afterwards, in a sense. And then, although that the course at the Plantin Mauritius, which is an aggregate postgraduate on typography and book design, was completed, I really wanted to create a real typeface design, like a text typeface. For real, to see how it's done, and not just the theoretical part or like the historical aspects of preserving books and paper and everything surrounding publishing a book, which is a very interesting course to follow, especially that it's one of the few courses in Belgium that offers this extra information, and from people who are really are like in the field, designers and professionals in also publishing. So it's not really just the manufacturer of a book and true history, but it's also like how to publish in Belgium and or the Netherlands or like the Low Countries. But it's also about preserving books, material, book binding. But for me, again, it was like interesting, but I wanted really to know how it's like to do it or to create a typeface. So that's when Reading, the University of Reading, came into the picture, and I applied for doing an MA in typeface design there.
And why did you choose Reading over The Hague, say, for example?
Many people ask me this. I don't have a specific reason to really have chosen Reading over Den Haag, in a sense. Back then, being Belgian, because Belgian design is very much influenced, like graphic design is very much influenced with Dutch design, especially in the years that I was like going to school, like my bachelor's, which was around the turn of the millennium, like the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s. There was lots of influence by Dutch designers, graphic design-wise. And I felt that if I would go to Holland or to the Netherlands and Haarlem to do typeface design, I knew about like the vision of Noordse, which I follow very much, and I very like his method of writing and how to interpret writing into a typographic typeface, like font. But I didn't want to be a Dutch clone in Belgium, so to speak. Clone like because we were influenced already so much that I think I wanted to have more a different or another approach. So maybe that's why I went to Reading and tried to follow a more historical or not really historical, but because in The Hague, as well, it's also there's also a typographic history and everything, but a different approach in designing type. And I just applied for Reading back then, and I got accepted. But what was mainly special for me, and in a sense, it's when it all started with the whole non-Latin aspect for me, is because of my travels in India, I lived for 2 months in a Tibetan community, like in Dharamsala, and that's where I learned how to read and write Tibetan language. So I can do basic conversation, but I can read the text, I can write the script and everything. And one of the aspects of the course in Reading, already back then, because I started in Reading in 2004, it's a few years ago now, but we were supposed to design a text typeface, but additionally we could, rather than also design serif, sans serif, or extra weights to compile a family, there was also the option to design a non-Latin typeface. And I asked back then, is it possible to do a Tibetan typeface, like to try and approach doing this? And Jerry Leonidas, who is the course director, and back then as well, he had to ask Dr. Fiona Ross, like, if she would be able to supervise me and guide me along the way, and luckily she agreed to doing this. And that's when I actually started, like, creating or designing a Tibetan typeface that year as well. So
that's where the Lungta typeface
that's
family
the
came out of.
Lungta, Lungta came out of that year of Reading, indeed. And that's like Latin Tibetan open type font. And back then it was the first one that was out there already. Like there existed back then already a few Tibetan typefaces, but the quality of those typefaces was not really satisfactory. From different angles, point of views, like not only the outlines or the glyphs were not always, like of those existing fonts were not always designed beautifully or correctly. Like there was lots of jagged edges or too many notes, and the rendering on screen was not always satisfactory. But also like the adaptation to different platforms like PC and Macintosh or Linux was not really happening at the moment. So we told, back then happening, or the evolution of OpenType and all the technical aspects coming into the picture. It was back then the first one that was really like being established. Also back in those days, neither Microsoft or Apple had in 2004 a Tibetan keyboard layout or anything, so it was a bit difficult how to match the script to a keyboard, Latin keyboard and everything. So it was quite a challenge back then to really design it and create it and develop it.
But you said you learned to read and write in such a short amount.
In 2 months' time. But
how is that possible?
Because I was, I traveled around India for about 6 months and I went to different parts of India. I had created my own route in a sense. And when I was in Dharamsala, I gave a bit of teaching to small children and locals. It was just informal teaching, just in exchange of like accommodation that I stayed with a Tibetan family.
What were you teaching then?
Just basic English with textbooks, so, and with some drawings. We would go to the market and to have just some basic English classes. And in return, they said, maybe we can do something in return as well, apart from the accommodation. And because of my typographic interests, I already collected quite some samples and writings of the different writing systems in India. But in my eyes, the Tibetan had something special. I really like the forms or the shapes of the characters, and also the way that it's like, the structure of the script or the writing system is, for me, quite intriguing, that it's written from left to right, but at the same time vertically, because of some formation of syllables. They require some consonants, and which is like a stacking of the base characters on top of each other. And you've got the same kind of principle in most Indian languages or scripts as well. But Tibetan can go up to 9 or 10 characters that go underneath one another. And I was quite intrigued with how the system was written, that one of my students, who was also a calligrapher and linguist, approached me and said, why don't you learn the language? It would be nice to communicate. So then it was like daily from textbooks from children that I would really study writing and pronouncing each of the characters and that I continued to do for 2 months. So really every single day, like, and that you can call the ritual I had back then. And it was really a nice environment. It was, yeah, at the foothills of the Himalaya. Just writing and reading and trying to find the rhythm of, yeah, the basic characters and the writing system and try to make it work.
Was it also the political situation of Tibet, like being not the country that it wants to be, with their, like, the Dalai Lama being in India residing? Does that enhance your sympathy for?
Yes and no. In a sense, of course, I've got my personal feelings and opinions about the whole Tibet-China situation. And in a sense, I might have been influenced by the fact that they were living in exile and still are living in exile in India. Well, not all of them. There are still Tibetans in China, of course, or in Tibet. But it's, in a sense, I was mainly interested in the writing system. And also for the PhD or the research I did afterwards, I really concentrated on typography, because it's very difficult to introduce politics, I would say, into like a text or research about a script or a language. I know there's some people who say that, and writing is political in some sense. I don't want to go further into these statements or anything, but I think for me, I still want to be as objective as possible about designing, well, good letter forms, obviously with your own traditions and your own influences and affection to certain styles or writing styles or typographic styles. But regarding the whole Tibet situation, I was not really influenced by the fact that the Dalai Lama is living in the Outer Dharamsala to really design a new typeface or anything. But my old vision of designing good quality typefaces for non-Latin scripts and also the other projects I'm doing, it's not really like scripts that are used by lots of people. It's like not only minority languages, but some of the scripts are like ancient scripts or like scripts that are being revived at the moment because of some historical or political situations. But for me, it's like to really also offer to those people who speak and write a script and speak the language, also to offer good typefaces. And I think, such typefaces have to be designed without any political views. Just to reach as much people, I think, as possible without conflicting, user. Like, if that's, if you understand a bit what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Yesterday after Robert, I don't know if you were there. If you look back now to the typeface that you designed, mm-hmm. do you think it's more... has a lot of Latin influences in the way you approached it, or?
Well, his point was, of course, that like type designers have a tendency to make the exotic, the writing system, make them look more like Latin. Yeah. Is that something, when you perceive your own work, your body of work now?
Well, I'm trying to follow what he's saying. And I also have like the vision, and it's, in a sense, a vision of also my mentor, which is Fiona Ross, but the vision is, and what I follow is that I think you should leave the authenticity of the script into a typeface or the font, and to create a non-Latin font that has to work together or well with a Latin font doesn't necessarily mean introducing characteristics of strokes into this to script, so to speak. And I'm really not in favor of Latinizing non-Latin fonts or even orientalizing, or how do you say this, or Indianizing or Arabicizing Latin shapes or letter forms, because I think it's not really to do with the style of I think each script should maintain its own identity and to harmonize a script.
But the main thing is, how do you define the relationship between, for instance, in your Lungta font, like how do you define the relationship between the Tibetan and the Latin shapes?
Well, the main relationship between both script is really to match them size-wise, like to match the baseline and the excite of the Latin with the notional baseline and the character base height of that non-Latin script, or in my case, the Tibetan, so that both scripts optically look like equally scaled. The main difficulty is, of course, when you have this vertical stackings, because then it becomes tricky or difficult, because eligibility also have to work with the restrictions of the UPM that you're designing in, like the units that you're designing, without having clipping at the top or the bottom of the character. So you're restricted within the M square that you're designing the characters in. And it's mainly to do with the optical sizing of both scripts, and also with the stroke weights, so that you've got, for instance, the stem of the I, the L, the H is like about the same. Again, optical, the units don't necessarily have to be identical, but that it optically, the color of both scripts is equal. And in that sense, I think you preserve a very nice text on paper or on screen.
And it's also the amount of text. I can imagine that a text, a certain A4 text in Latin, like the equivalent in Tibetan will be much less or even more, I don't know.
In Tibetan, it's even, it depends. It's quite difficult because they write with long sentences and they don't have any word breaks or anything. They just continue, the end of a syllable is written or typed with a dot. The end of a sentence is just like two or one, depending on the sort of text that you're setting. Mm-hmm. Long strokes, so to speak. And they tend to have like not continuing text like in Latin, but just line per line per line, and then have like a space in between. Obviously with newspapers or anything, it continues to flow as well. But that again is like a Western influence from, for instance, typesetting programs or equipment like Word, Microsoft Word, or other word processing software that they've been using. And they're just using it to produce their texts. And if they don't want to replicate either Buddhist text or religious text or political text, which are designed in the specific or layout in a specific way to reproduce the old pechas, which is the very long block books of the old times, which are still in use today. But then if they don't want to replicate this, of course, then it's just continuing texts. And it's not always the equivalent. But then there's one book from the University of Chicago Press that used Lungta to have like a bilingual edition of poems from...
That's on your website, right?
That's on my website.
I saw that.
And what they did is like they made like a bilingual, like a translation for the first time from these 108 poems by Kedun Chopel. And they matched the layout of the Roman text with the Latin, so that you have two pages on the left-hand side. It's like the Tibetan text. On the right-hand side, it's like the translation. And in that instance, they really tried to... I didn't do the translation or anything. I did the typesetting of the Tibetan in it with Lungta. But they really tried to follow the line lengths and the sentences of the Tibetan, so that for this publication, it's like a harmonious or like a nice publication. Mm. But in some instances, it's difficult because, as I was saying, the sentences are not really constructed the same way as the Latin ones. And also, the problem with the Tibetan text, it's not a problem, but it's just an issue that you need to overcome, is that because of those vertical stackings, the line lengths sometimes might differ. Mm-hmm. Because you have two consecutive lines, if one of the sentences has a word or a syllable in which is like 8 or 9 conjuncts or base characters stacked up underneath one another, the line length obviously increases. So it's not always like beautiful typography in Western eyes. Mm. Because it's so difficult really not to check or to view the texts that have been typeset or been written in the other cultures from your own Western point of view, because we are brought up with our own traditions and typographic traditions. But they've got their own ways of producing texts as well. And it's difficult not to just view it with your Western eyes, but also put yourself in their shoes and to see. And that's why I think it's important to do research and to really investigate.
But there's a lot of designers that design in a language that they're not familiar with.
Yeah.
But do you think it's important that they know the language, like can speak or...?
I don't necessarily think that the typeface designer should be fluent in a language or like in the script that he's or she is designing. But I definitely think that they should know the basics of a language or like the structures, the structure of a script. obviously recognize the characters and also recognize the characteristics of the base characters, and to see how they relate to one another, because it's really a structure or a code that works in each writing system. Each writing system has like a specific style of creating or constructing the characters and having like similar strokes in different characters, similar approaches of finials, of diacritical marks, of anything. So I really think that the type designer should know this, or should know the structure of this non-Latin script, mm-hmm. or a script that he or she is not used in or not native in. But I think it's also essential to each, with each project that you do, if it's designing a non-Latin script, that you consult like linguists or historians, in a sense, or people who are really fluent, people that live in the countries. But then it's also tricky, because it's the same like with designing a Latin typeface. You won't necessarily go to a bakery to ask for some feedback on your letter forms. So it's people who really, I think, should be really, not necessarily specialists or experts, but should be knowledgeable in the linguistic aspects of a script, and to ask their advice for feedback. And because it's really designing a typeface or a non-Latin, well, it's also with a Latin, it's knowing the structure of how a typeface works, that I don't think that the designer really needs to speak or be fluent. Radio.